Are you ready to rock, John? I believe next up we are going to go with John Horrigan here. He is, of course, we already talked all about John, and you know him pretty well from my earlier introduction of him. He's really the man behind this whole thing. He's the muscle, and I'm the hustle. And tonight, he's going to be talking about the Los Angeles air raid of 1942, as well as black helicopters. And let me just give you a little thumbnail look at John's background real quick before we bring him up on stage. He's obviously tonight's producer. He's been researching the paranormal phenomena since 1990. He's visited UFO hotspots like Roswell, Area 51, the plains of San Agustin, Kecksburg, Shag Harbor, Dulce, Gulf Breeze, and the San Luis Valley, investigating UFOs, alleged Bigfoot encounters in Oregon, Washington, British Columbia, Ohio, and New England, as well as lake monster sightings at Loch Ness and Lake Champlain. So he's really got his finger in a whole bunch of different pies. He's a seasoned historian. He's a leading authority on historical weather. He's lectured frequently around New England in libraries for the last 20 years and has produced hundreds of radio, TV, and audio podcasts dedicated to paranormal phenomena and historical anomalies. What I like about John, too, is, as I said, he's been doing this for almost 20 years, and he's not out there with his face on all kinds of TV shows or really doing his own stuff. You really haven't really heard much from John Horrigan. He prefers to do his own research, and it's a personal journey for him, and it's kind of actually a little bit different and unique here tonight that he's going to be sharing some of his insights into this strange world that is the paranormal scene. So without any further ado, John, I think we're ready to bring you on stage. So, ladies and gentlemen, John Horrigan.
Thank you. Thanks, man.
All right.
Thank you, folks. We're under siege here in air raid. As Tim said, I try to just stay in the background of ufology, and tonight what I wanted to talk to you about were some air raids, phantom air raids, that took place during World War II, immediately following Pearl Harbor of December 7, 1941. And the more I research this, the more odd I find it. The father of air raids was Leonardo da Vinci. He was the one who said, "I have created this design, why not use it to drop bombs on people?" Of course, the first air raids were not in England per se, but they were used in Civil War, as Matt Moniz has pointed out to me. But there were raids in January of 1915, two Zeppelin naval airships bombed Great Yarmouth and King's Lynn in England. So they were used, dirigibles were used as vehicles to drop bombs on enemy cities. Now, I'm going to be racing through some newspaper articles tonight, extracting the most important bullets. So allow me to drive the narrative. If you see the text up there, I have to put it up there to show you how genuine the newspaper article is. So I will drive the narrative and extract key bullets. But how about this? This shows up on December 9, 1941. New York-bound enemy planes alarm entire Northeast. Huh? This is after Pearl Harbor. And the yellow note there, enemy planes were approaching Long Island from New England and then off the Virginia coast. Well, this got my curiosity. I quote, 1 o'clock, Lieutenant Fitzhugh Carrier of the Army Air Defense Command reported that, quote, 10 unidentified planes were within an hour of New York, and the warnings reached a crescendo, which was fright until a bombing was expected any minute. Lieutenant Carrier asked whether this might not be a test. He said, "This is not a test. It looks like," and of course, we've lost the second page. But some other things, Fiorello LaGuardia, who was the head of the Office of Civilian Defense, told the radio public on the radio, "I do not want to unduly alarm my fellow citizens, but I want to be realistic. The situation is serious. We must not underestimate what happened 24 hours ago." And he's talking about Pearl Harbor. And what happened in New York? Well, there was no air raid system, so the police had to carry the message to the public. And as a precautionary measure, school children were sent home. And there was a precipitous drop on Wall Street. In fact, it was down hundreds of millions of dollars in the worst slump of the stock market since the collapse of France in 1940. The alarm then, check this out, spread to Boston, where police shifted heavy stores of guns and ammunition from storage vaults to stations throughout the city, and where industrial establishments were advised to prepare for a raid. These many alerts of the period reflect the inexperience of both the public and the defense forces. So again, you see on both sides that people did not know how to react to an air raid. Now, the first thing I ask is, well, are the Germans operating in the North Atlantic? Of course, with U-boats they are, but do they have any aircraft carriers? No, not operational. They had one known as the Graf Zeppelin, which was launched on December 8, 1938, but it was never finished, and it was sunk in 1947. Were they vengeance weapons? And help me out, Andy Lake, Vergeltungswaffen. Vengeance weapons like the V-1 buzz bomb, the doodle bug, or were they like the V-2 rocket? Were these vengeance weapons? Was it the possibility that what they were seeing were long-range German aircraft, heretofore known as the America bomber? The answer is no, because it was actually handed to Reich Marshal Hermann Göring on May 12, 1942, which is well after this air raid. And of course, we think it was never built, although rumor persists that one America bomber came within 100 miles of New York City and had to turn back to Germany due to fuel considerations. So it wasn't the Germans, but we do know that the Germans did have exotic aircraft designs available to them. Check out this wing, huh? The Horten HO-18 with this type of stealth design, or ULO, ultra low observable. And then of course we have the Horten HO-229B. So the Germans did have some exotic aircraft in design, but they were not responsible for that quote-unquote air raid of New York and Boston. Nor were they Japanese balloon bombs or Japanese fire bombs. That aerial assault, that campaign of fire balloons did not commence until November of 1944. They went on to launch 9,000 balloons through April of 1945. So again, I'm trying to find out what causes air raid, and I can't come up with a reason. And then you move to December 8th, the same day, across the continent. This shows up on the Times Union as a headline. Japs try to bomb coast, routed off Golden Gate. And of course, I've extracted this from Rents.com. That'll get your attention the day after Pearl Harbor. And the article goes on to say, and here's the actual article, I'm going to take some extractions here. The Los Angeles police teletype carried the following warning from the city air raid warden, quote, air raid attacks of enemy planes, surface vessels, and submarines are imminent tonight. All precautions have been taken to avoid surprise. And then it starts its byline here. The attempted attack on the San Francisco Bay Area tonight by enemy planes was a large-scale operation, according to Brigadier General William Ord Ryan, head of the 4th Interceptor Command. An apparent attempt by Japanese warplanes to bomb the San Francisco Bay Area was reported last night by Brigadier General William Ord Ryan of the 4th Intercept Command, who said a large number of unidentified aircraft were turned back at the Golden Gate. He said the invading planes vanished to the southwest over the sea after searchlights at the Presidio of San Francisco were turned on and other measures taken to thwart an attack. He did not disclose the nature of these measures. Quote, this is what he said. They came from the sea, were turned back, and the Navy sent out 3 vessels to find out where they came from. I don't know how many planes there were, but there were a large number. And then he goes on to say, well, they weren't Army planes, they weren't Navy planes, and you can be sure they weren't civilian planes. So he's saying it's not ours, it's either theirs or it's something else. And official sources in Washington now, on the other side of the continent, were not in agreement on whether the whole performance was a series of surprise tests or the terrible truth. So along the Pacific Air Coast in Pacific Coast in December of 1941, there were only 45 thoroughly modern fighter planes to defend a coastline which extended 1,200 miles, along which located such important aircraft facilities as those of Boeing in Seattle, Douglas and Lockheed in Los Angeles, and Consolidated in San Diego. We only had about 10 such heavy bombers, 75 medium bombers. There was an acute shortage of ammunition. And then here's the green bullet here. To reconstruct the problem, and this shows up, that let's suppose for a moment that there was the presence of 34 Japanese ships off the California coast on December 9, 1941. And when I saw that, my jaw dropped. I can take the UFO explanation, but are you telling me there was a second Japanese task force off the coast of California? Right after Pearl Harbor, get your attention. But they do say that 14 bombers destined for the Southwest Pacific were in the vicinity. Their machine gun turrets wouldn't work, but they were accounted for. So in Seattle, meanwhile, the next day on December 9th, 1941, there's an air raid, and a mob went around the city smashing light bulbs on streets and in stores to douse the light during the blackout to enforce it. So just to show you what the carrier task force did for Pearl Harbor, it departed on November 26th and returned on December 23rd. And it's a large-scale operation. It was a clandestine operation. So in order to launch a secondary force, it would take some doing. Now, there was an attack on Aruba on February 19, 1942, and on Puerto Rico on March 2, 1942. And of course, President Roosevelt warned the nation that enemy ships could shell New York City or enemy planes could drop bombs on Detroit. Roosevelt actually said that. So during the course of one of his fireside reports, a Japanese sub surfaced off the coast of California, just north of Santa Barbara, in an area known as Elwood, and lobbed, it depends on who you talk to, 10, 15, 25 shells onto an oil refinery there. And then you get to the first Los Angeles air raid. Again, the Los Angeles went through a total of 6 blackouts, and this one was on December 11th, 1941. And I like the byline there. Southland plunged into darkness as Army reports presence of unidentified aircraft, searchlights seen, and gunfire reported. Basically, the interceptor command announced this is not a practice blackout, which means, he says, this is the real thing, and that there was a yellow signal indicating the approach of enemy raiders was flashed on the statewide teletype at 7:35 p.m. on December 11th. Police said the signal indicated the presence of unidentified airplanes approaching Los Angeles from the sea, but did not necessarily mean they were the enemy. So you've got an issue. You've got to... The entire coastal defense going nuts here. There's something on their primitive radar, and it's not Japanese, and it's not ours. Whose is it? And this is where this falls into the UFO category. Anyways, he says there are planes over the south of Los Angeles that are unidentified. The area will be blacked out until we can identify them. So why is there a panic? And here are the four causes that I found out. Number one, are the Germans operating in the Pacific theater early in the war? I did a lecture a couple of weeks ago called The Two Robinson Crusoes of Wake Island. Two men hid out in the brush on Wake Island during the Japanese occupation for 4 months, surviving on rations. And they do report on 3 separate occasions seeing German Heinkel bombers. Now, I maintain that they misidentified Japanese Nell bombers. Second, there's a total incompetence amongst military high command and anti-aircraft batteries due to the lack of real-time war experience. And a panic causes a hysteria among trained military personnel that produces phantom aerial attackers. So if it's not the Germans, are they just trigger happy due to the inexperience? Or third, and this is the most disturbing to me, there's a second Japanese carrier strike force of approximately 35 surface vessels that launch probing aircraft that strafe the Golden Gate, trying to draw anti-aircraft fire for reconnaissance purposes, but somehow they fail to drop any bombs. That just doesn't fit in with the Japanese signature and the way they conducted warfare. And then finally, this is an incursion of unidentified flying objects, or that some people call early Foo Fighters, and I think it's the fourth bullet. So the Japs shelled the refinery on February 23rd, 1942, and I'm going to give you some bullets about the Los Angeles air raid, and then I'm going to play the actual CBS radio report, which runs 3 minutes and 37 seconds. And then if we have time, I'll have a mention about black helicopters, and we'll go to the intermission. So some bullets, some factoids. On February 23rd, 1942, at 7:07 p.m., a Japanese sub fired 15 shells at an oil refinery in Elwood, California. This is the first bombardment of the American mainland since the War of 1812. The next day, on February 24th, 1942, at 7 p.m., an air raid alert was in place throughout the greater Los Angeles area. The all clear came at 10:23 p.m. At 2:22 a.m., on the morning of February 24th, 1942, an air raid alert went off. At 2:43 a.m., multiple AAA batteries, that's anti-aircraft, opened up, and they expended 1,480 rounds, 6 people died, 2 to falling shrapnel, 3 heart failures, and 1 car accident. General George Marshall tells Franklin Delano Roosevelt that the, quote, 37th California Brigade fired 1,430 rounds between 3:12 and 4:15 a.m. Marshall also told him that as many as 15 planes
at speeds of 200 miles per hour at altitudes between 9,000 and 18,000 feet. So this is on record, and Marshall was telling the president there were planes there in the vicinity over Los Angeles. At 1:45 a.m., radar picked up an unidentified aerial target. At 2 a.m., the 4th Interceptor Command picked up well-tracked target. And at 2:15 a.m., AAA batteries go to green alert. That means the object is within 100 miles of the coast and heading towards Los Angeles. At 2:21 a.m., objects came within a few miles of the coast, so a blackout is issued. And right now I'm going to play you that particular audio recording. This is CBS Radio, and it came on the air on February 25th, 1942. And again, they were just as confused in terms of what this meant. Nobody knew what it meant at the time, but here we go.
The news of the world, Wednesday, February 25th. Once again, Columbia's correspondents in world capitals and the fighting zones in the Western Pacific are ready to give you the latest news direct by shortwave radio. And now for news of our West Coast, we take you to Los Angeles and the report of Byron Potter. Anti-aircraft guns went into action against unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area shortly after 3 a.m. Pacific wartime this morning. The anti-aircraft guns began barking during a blackout ordered by the 4th Interceptor Command at 2:25 a.m.
Enhancements.
The unidentified object, which some sources thought might be a blimp, moved slowly down the Pacific coast from Santa Monica and disappeared south of Long Beach.
This is the famous photograph.
Army officials declined to comment on the possibility that the object might have been a blimp. However, it required nearly 30 minutes to travel some 25 miles, far slower than an airplane.
Dr. Bruce Maccabee.
Watchers on the rooftop of the Columbia Broadcasting Building in the heart of Hollywood could plainly see the flashes of guns and searchlights sweeping the skies in a white arc along the coastal area. Concussion of the shells could be felt in downtown Los Angeles, 15 miles away. U.S. Army planes quickly took to the dark skies, but whether they contacted the object has not been announced. Army officials say they will not comment until they receive a full report of the action. Although some watchers say they saw airplanes in the air, semi-official sources say they probably were the U.S. Army's pursuit. Several observers say they saw one or more planes spotlighted by 20 or 30 searchlights. The object moved southward, presumably over Huntington Park at the western edge of Los Angeles, and on southward to about Long Beach on the coast. By 3:30 a.m., observers said the object appeared to be over the south of Long Beach. Searchlights closely followed the object down the coast and kept it centered in their glare. Shells frequently could be seen bursting near the object, but none appeared to hit it. The shooting stopped about 3:30 a.m.
So I just want to stop it there. So there's an object over the center of Los Angeles hovering. 1,430 or 480 rounds are fired at it. No planes are scrambled. There are six different batteries involved with this firing. One of the excuses coming from the Pentagon says that it's a balloon. A blimp could not withstand that type of anti-aircraft barrage. And people reported hearing that ricochet sound, that, you know, that cartoon type sound, as if shells were pinging off the object. So this is an anomalous incident. And I point to this as an early UFO encounter. As Peter mentioned, the UFOs tend to show up in heavily armed areas or where a big event is about to occur. And it's amazing that over Los Angeles on the evenings of February 24th and into the 25th of 1942, that this object hovered over LA. I'm continuing to research all these in addition to if there was a Boston air raid on December 8th and December 9th, 1941. As you know, there are other, I love this headline, Jap Fleet heads for America, but this is concerning the Battle of Midway, which didn't take place until June of 1942. The Japs did bomb Fort Stevens on June 21st, 1942. They also hit, it's called the Lookout Air Raid, on September 9th of 1942. And there were other air raids over Washington. We don't have time for that. But just want to let you know that my curiosity in ufology ceases the day before Roswell, which is July 4th, 1947. But like Peter, I'm fascinated by the government disinformation campaign in the late 1940s, and I'll continue to research that San Francisco air raid. So we're going to go, I guess, Tim, why don't you bring us to the intermission, and I'll come back with some more.
All right, John, thank you very much. We're going to head on into the intermission now.